Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Top Stories. It's producer Chris, thoroughly loving my 1 week takeover here. We're visiting May 2014 now, and wow, what a great birthday I had that month. And Nigel Farage was leading the charge as a bunch of terrifying politicians tried to take Europe back to the, quotation marks, good old days. It's Bugle issue 270, fruitcakes and loonies.
Top story this week, Europe goes to the polls. Polls suggest that Europe hates itself. Europe, Andy, has a complicated relationship with itself. It's a fiery relationship, like Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor. We'll have explosive fights, dragging the whole world in, and then we'll follow those up with marathon sessions of makeup bureaucracy. let me just put it this way. When there's a sock hanging on the front door of the EU building in Brussels, you do not want to open that door, because they will be balls deep in the middle of a 12-hour constitutional drafting orgy. It's not so much a love-hate relationship in Europe as it is a tolerate-hate relationship. The European Union was supposed to be a way of taking our differences and turning them into a positive, rather than taking our differences and using them as a springboard for bloodbaths on an unprecedented scale. And in a general sense, it's been a success. But last week, there were elections to the European Parliament across the country, and there was something of a lurch to the right. And historically, Andy, when Europe lurches to the right, terrible things inevitably happen afterwards. The European political spectrum is something of a batshit barometer. It is the canary in the crazy mine. And when that thing starts squawking too loudly, it's probably time to start digging some fucking trenches in Belgium.
Yes, well, as you suggest, you don't need to be a rocket historian to think that if there's one single continent in the world, one continent that should know the dangers of swinging politically to the right, Europe would be pretty fucking high up that list. I would say top four or five. Antarctica, you can probably excuse if it sinks into retrograde extremism. But really, Europe should have picked up on those hints from history. And by hints, I mean cautionary cricket bats to the face. It's been concerning, John. It's been a huge, basically extended middle finger to the European political establishment. A Pandora's Jeroboam of resentment has been uncorked, and basically a full double bird flip to the entire EU. And another factor in this drift to the right is, you might think, how has Europe allowed this to happen? And one of the factors in it is the importance of the European elections to the voters across the continent. And that importance is basically roughly as important as wondering what the difference between table tennis and ping pong is, or trying to remember all the words to the Boney M. classic of historical gangster pop, Mar Baker. In the Czech Republic and Slovakia, two countries released from the yoke of communism and embraced into the bosom of the EU tent, they were 19% and 13% turnouts. And in Britain, Well, that was worth the wait, wasn't it? In Britain, 34% of people could be asked to struggle all the way to their local polling station, which is about standard for a European election. So basically, this is Europe just basically pressing the snooze alarm button and saying, oh, it's probably not going to be as bad as last time we swung hard to the right. And there's been a lot of debate over what the causes of this have been, and I think a lot of it comes down to the perception amongst the people around Europe that the EU political elite basically sit around eating scrambled Fabergé eggs for breakfast and not really doing what they're supposed to do.
It's hard to draw significant conclusions from any single set of election results, but the European parliamentary elections make a pretty strong case for the argument that Europeans are complete arseholes. Because in a worrying waltz as old as the continent itself, Eurosceptic and far-right parties see significant ground in what the French Prime Minister called a political earthquake. And I don't know if it was truly a political earthquake, Andy, as much as it was a shame-inducing shitstorm. Some very depressing parties around Europe made gains, although to even call them parties is slightly misleading. They're not a party-like expression of joy in any form. They're more like parties in the sense that a wake is a party. They're essentially funerals for humanity. The UK Independence Party, or UKIP, or C*****s for short, made big gains in the British election, and the French National Front, led by the abomination of decency in a pantsuit form, Marine Le Pen, also made big gains, and the truly terrifying Greek neo-Nazi group Golden Dawn also won seats. They are misleadingly named, of course, after a sunrise, but it would only be the kind of sunrise you mistook for a sunrise when the world, in fact, was actually on fire. The French National Front won 25% of the vote in France and were described as fascist by Germany's finance minister. And when a German leader describes you as fascist, Andy, the label sticks. Good luck peeling that thing off. German Chancellor Angela Merkel described the far-right victories as remarkable and regrettable and said that the best response was to boost economic growth and jobs. Although, again, she really has to say that, Andy. There is no world in which a German Chancellor can say, I actually understand the frustrations that people have and will work to restore the pride they wish to feel in their country. She can't say that. That's not an option without people starting to kick the tires on their Spitfires.
Miss Le Pen, the rather charmless, as you say, French right-winger, said this: our people demand one type of politics. Politics by the French, for the French, with the French. Good luck with that. May I remind you, Madame Le Pen, of the words of Charles de Gaulle, who said, how can you govern a country which has 246 varieties of cheese?
So, Marine Le Pen said that she will now use her mandate to defend France and fight crazy measures like votes for immigrants. Although, to be historically clear, France's idea of defending itself is usually completely rolling over and waiting for someone else to come and defend them for them. So maybe that's the kind of national defence she was referring to. UK Prime Minister David Cameron said the British public was disillusioned with the EU and that their message was received and understood. François Hollande asked Europe to pay attention to France after describing his party's defeat to the National Front as painful. And the week was split between political leaders saying they had heard the dissatisfaction and the right-wing groups claiming a seismic victory that would propel them even further. But as you say, Andy, let's get all this in perspective. The election turnout in general was 43.1%, according to European Parliament figures. So this is still an overwhelming landslide victory for people absolutely not giving a shit at all.
We've always got that as a
compliment. The EU even tried to spin that continental turnout as a positive, saying this was the first time that turnout had not fallen since the previous election, and that this was an improvement on last time of 0.1%. Wow, Andy. They've taught Europe to dream again.
Yeah, we have started lifting our testicles out of the electoral food processor. That is a good sign. Marine Le Pen also said this: tonight is a massive rejection of the EU. What is happening in France prefigures what will happen in all European countries. The return of the nation. Now, I think nationalism has a pretty checkered record, as we've suggested, on this continent. And also, I would argue there is a time and a place for nations, John. And that time and place is in Brazil, starting in 2 weeks' time with footballs. That is the only time that you really, that this kind of thing is acceptable. Football, sport. The saviour, John.
In the United Kingdom, as I saw, UKIP purple posters were everywhere on the streets, like a stick-on siren call to self-destruction. And much has been written and bloviated about UKIP's leader, Nigel Farage, who is like a one-man echo from a time Britain should be desperately trying to forget. He is constantly photographed with either a pint of beer or a cigarette in his hand, and his supporters claim that he's a man of the people, an everyman. And to that, Andy, I say this. If Nigel Farage is everyman, then I hate everybody.
This is part of Farage's current popularity, that he's viewed as the kind of man you could have a chat with in the pub, albeit that chat would probably end up with you calling him a fucking nut job, him calling you a and you then telling him to stop ruining the quiz night by shouting out Brussels as every answer. He suggested that the election had put the UKIP fox in the Westminster hen house, which I'm not sure. I mean, do you really want to be aligning yourself with a fox as a political party, a large vermin renowned principally for thieving stuff from people's bins, people's British bins, murdering defenceless British poultry with low levels of personal hygiene and high volume sexual intercourse? Is that something for a political party to aspire to? Even this nation's once favourite celebrity fox, Basil Brush, the former TV star, currently is embroiled in lengthy legal battles over unpaid tax and a noise abatement order. I should state that Mr. Brush, real name Basil the Fox, insists the tax schemes he was investigating were technically legal and that he was supporting grassroots banking in the Cayman Islands. And regarding the noise abatement order, he said, "Are two foxes not allowed to fall in love anymore? What the f*** has this country become?"
One of Farage's supporters said, "When Nigel speaks, he doesn't sound like he swallowed a book of soundbites." And, you know, that is true, Andy, because when he speaks, it sounds like he swallowed an English history book from the 1920s, a bag of marbles, and three bottles of red wine, and is vomiting them all back up simultaneously into a microphone. That is what he sounds like. There is justifiable concern in Britain about what UKIP's electoral victories mean for the future. Ed Miliband, the opposition leader, argued that UKIP had won votes by touting simple solutions to serious problems that are built up over generations, then saying, "But there isn't a simple answer." And that's clearly ridiculous, Andy, because as the UKIP manifesto perfectly simply testifies, what could be simplifyingly simpler than pledging to build a simple time machine to go back to the late 1800s and live permanently and selectively in Britain's glorious past? God save the Queen, Andy. Not Elizabeth, Victoria, the real one.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She was all queen.
And also, ex-Prime Minister Tony Blair said that UKIP's
views on...
God
rest his soul.
Was that?
God rest his soul, John. God. I mean, he's still alive, but his soul is long dead.
That's true. Said that UKIP's views on immigration were regressive and that under that facade, there is something unpleasant and nasty. And the problem with that statement is that it implies that UKIP's facade is pleasant and unnasty in the first place. They are a disgusting book wrapped in a revolting cover.
Hear more of our shows. Buy our Dancy Lagarde book written by Alice. Hear her on The Gargle. Donate. Go to thebuglepodcast.com.
Hi, it's producer Chris from The Bugle here. Did you know that I have a new series of my podcast, Richie Firth Travel Hacker, out now? It's the show where Richie Firth and I talk about how to make travel better in our very special way. In this series, we discuss Lime Bikes, Teslas, the London Overground, and a whole bunch of other random stuff that possibly involves wheels or tracks or engines of some variety. God, what a hot sell this is. I mean, you must be so excited. Listen now.